Professor with David Livingston, my colleague and co-host, and we're with Bob Zimmerman, our good colleague, and we're reviewing Bob's book, Genesis, the story of Apollo 8, 55 years ago, Christmas time. The launch from Earth orbit. Emphasize now, this is the first time men in a machine built by men are going to leave Earth orbit. Bob, your storytelling is vivid at this point because they're looking through the portals at Earth as it's receding. Can you recount quickly their understanding of what they were then doing when they saw the Earth getting smaller and smaller?
Jim Lovell is the one whose sayings are the most famous, mostly because it was his job to talk to the ground control during the hour or so after they fired their rocket engine, their upper stage engine in Earth orbit and left Earth orbit heading to the moon. And he talked about how we could see the entire Atlantic, including Africa and South America and the United States in one shot. He said he could put his thumb across the entire Earth. He also said it was kind of like being in a tunnel, watching the bright exit of the tunnel receding from you, because the only thing that was bright or colorful anywhere to be seen in the sky was the Earth, and that was bright. And as it moved away and got smaller, it receded from it. It was like you were going into a tunnel. The other thing about this is how quickly they receded. We forget that when they first fire the engine, they move away from the Earth extremely fast. And so they moved away from the Earth extremely fast and then slowly slowed down as the Earth tried to recapture them. Of course, they were going too fast. They eventually reached the Luna's gravitational field and they shifted into that. That was their first mission. And of course, it's the same with all astronauts when they go in space. The Earth is a wondrous thing to look at. And you know it's where your home is. And it's the only place you know you can survive. And they all responded in that manner.
David, you have a question.
When they saw Earth going smaller and smaller, were there any comments that maybe didn't make it into the public for their wives who were so worried? Did anything get back to them on that moment?
No, I've looked at all the transcripts. These guys were very focused on getting the job done. And there was really no serious problem. There's one story that happened shortly after launch when they were still in Earth orbit. Jim Lovell tried to remove his life vest, and he did because he was trying to get more comfortable. And then in the process of trying to start, he accidentally set it off so that it started to expand. And he had to struggle with this thing in the Apollo capsule to try to get it to stop expanding, fill the capsule up. As he said, we have a Mae West here because it was, you know, these things growing. But they got it under control. And, you know, once again, it's what's amazing about the entire space program, almost entirely from its whole history, but especially in the 1960s, is how few human errors occurred by the astronauts themselves in flight. They went prepared and they went with a firm resolve to do nothing wrong. And that was Borman's main goal. In fact, he refused to let them have a new form of freeze-dried Christmas dinner because he thought, we're not going to try something new on this mission. We'll use the old freeze-dried foods we've been using because it's safer. I don't want to take any risks. And so that's why very little went wrong during the flight.
They reached lunar orbit. The dramatic moment comes up. Bob, what is loss of signal? Can you tell it quickly?
In both cases, when they went into lunar orbit and when they left lunar orbit, they had to fire the single engine they had on the service module of the Apollo capsule from behind the moon, which meant when they fired that engine, they were completely out of touch with the Earth. And so when they went behind the moon, we did not know if they would successfully get into lunar orbit until they came around the other side. And the same thing, and more significant, when they left lunar orbit, that fire engine had a fire, and it was the only engine that could get them out of lunar orbit. If it failed at that point, there was no redundancy, they'd be stuck in lunar orbit and die. And they fired the engines. We didn't know that. And when they came around the edge of the moon, Jim Lovell's was the first voice we heard. And what he said is, I want to report that there is a Santa Claus. And everyone knew that at that point they were on their way back to Earth.
David, you have a question.
How long did it take them to go around the moon to pick up the signal again?
Each lunar orbit was about 2 hours at that time. What's significant about their arrival in lunar orbit was that and it occurred on Christmas Eve on 1968. And they were going to do 10 orbits, 20 hours, which meant on Christmas Eve, Americans were orbiting the moon, the first humans ever to reach another world. And as the press officer for NASA told Frank Borman, when you do your telecast at prime time Christmas Eve from lunar orbit, you'll probably be listened to by more people in the history of the human race. You better think of something to say. And Borman asked him, could you help me? And Frank, Julian Scheer, the public relations head at NASA, said, it is not my place to put words in your mouth. You're free American, say what you want to say. And so they had to figure out what to say in lunar orbit at that very significant moment in time.
And the decision was Genesis, a surprise to everybody on Earth. I think very few people knew they were going to read from the Bible. That's my memory. Is that correct, Bob?
That is correct. I talk about this at great length. One of the reasons I wrote Genesis' story, Apollo 8, is I was really fascinated to find out exactly how the decision was made to read the first 12 verses of Genesis. And the story is very complicated because none of the astronauts were writers, and so they had trouble trying to figure out what to come up with. They asked friends. They were supposed to keep it somewhat quiet. Their wives had no idea. Borman had a very intelligent, educated man he had met during a previous public relations world tour. And he asked him, and he said he tried to figure it out, and he couldn't. So he asked another public relations guy he knew, Cy Layton, who sat down and finally came up with this from a suggestion from his wife. It was perfect because it was not preachy, but it was matched the magnificence of the moment. And so no one was told, no one except the public relations announcer at NASA, so that he wouldn't say something awkward when they finished speaking. He would at least know what to do and what to say that was appropriate. He was the only one that knew they were free to say what they wanted. NASA was going to tell them what to say.
David, you have a quick question.
You think they could pull that off today with NASA, or it would be more controlled?
Almost immediately after that mission, NASA clamped down. For example, Buzz Aldrin wanted to pray on the moon after the lunar landing, and he did so. But he was told by NASA, you better not make it obvious that's what you're doing. And only if you know what he's talking about, when you listen to the transcript, do you know that he's actually taking some wine and taking a wafer, the sacrament of Christianity, at that moment in time. But he was told, you can't do it. We have too much controversy. You can't have this kind of stuff. And today, it's become almost absurd, the censorship that goes on in our culture today. Students aren't allowed to pray freely on their own in classroom because supposedly it's separation of church and state. This is, of course, absurd. As a citizen, you're allowed to do whatever you want. The idea is not to establish a state religion, but people don't understand that anymore. And so I doubt this could happen now without problems. Private missions, though, by private companies and private citizens, that's going to be a different thing. The government won't have any say.
We have about a minute, Bob. Cold War. Cold War defines a lot of the decision-making in 1968, maybe everything. However, this success, Apollo 8, 50-50, succeeds. Does that end the Soviet program to land on the moon? Is that the finish?
Pretty much it was. The Soviets attempted to keep its program going for a while, but they had problems with their N-1 rocket. And their politicians basically knew the program was the race was over. Once we got astronauts around the moon, the whole competition was lost. And so they, within a year, shifted and claimed that they always were only interested in doing space stations, not going to the moon. Of course, that was a lie, but basically this won the race to the moon, the Apollo 8 mission. And most people in the program itself knew that. They don't consider Apollo 11 the victory. Apollo 8 was the victory.
55 years. Bob Zimmerman, Robert Zimmerman, Genesis, the story of Apollo 8, the first manned flight to another world, once upon a time. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.